Silver Rise Society.
Welcome to the Silver Eye Society podcast, the podcast for those few who still enjoy thinking. We're going to have a discussion on something that everybody has some experience with, social media, particularly the way that social media trains us to seek approval in destructive ways. So, in this peasant radio episode, this special edition of the Silver Eye Society, it is me, your host, Salome Sibonet, the brains and the beauty behind the podcast, and the bronze behind the podcast. I don't know what to attribute to Justin A.W. Blair, co-host of the Silver Eye Society.
I'm an expert in making social media destroy itself as opposed to destroy me. Thank you for being here. I can't wait for this discussion. And yes, I do consider myself the mental brawn of the podcast.
That's fair. And yes, you do use social media in a way that I actually recommend people check that out. Your Instagram specifically, because you don't use anything else. It's very like schizo posting. It's very all over the place, but it's authentic. And that's what we want to reward, right? Some authenticity. That's what I think social media today does the opposite of. I think it specifically, it gives you rewards, but it gives you rewards in random directions and often in directions that are destructive. So we've seen the phenomenon of women posting that a man blinked his eyes at them in the gym, and that becoming a thing. And so when things blow up on social media, it doesn't matter if they're negative or positive. What matters is, do you get attention for it? Do you get interactions for it? That's enough to incentivize people to go out into the world seeking scenarios they can pass off as drama that is going to fuel some outrage and retweets and all of that online. So I think that we're in a weird time where instead of being incentivized by the outside world or by systems in our society that are actually beneficial, like wanting to achieve excellence in your field, wanting to do something record-breaking, wanting to help people, you know, these old, traditional, long-forgotten things that were once considered worth pursuing, we're pursuing like a secondary metric of success, which is attention. That's what it is on social media. It's attention. And in some ways, humans have always been seeking attention. But in this particular medium, social media, it seems to kind of drive people crazy in their pursuit of attention, to the point that it makes people their worst selves. It's like you become these sad, fading versions of yourself that are just seeking another hit of attention. And so I don't know about where our society is going when, especially younger people that grow up with social media, they grow up entwined with this incentive to seek attention from faceless audiences who, at most, what people get sometimes from these big events that happen on social media, it's like a momentary form of entertainment. Yeah, you might have a video with a million hits and it's just like someone falling off a bridge or something. So it's not quality, it's just attention, attention for attention's sake that people seek on social media a lot. And look, there's a lot of controversy with this that we can tie it into. Where you have people like Matt Walsh, who recently got into a lot of hot water for going hardcore rant about I don't even know who this person is, Dylan Mulvaney, the person that's famous for being intensely trans, I guess. I don't know what, they have like a it's like a trans influencer. I don't even know what they do besides like be really trans. There's another example of someone that's probably doing something solely for attention in this case. But could you make the same criticism of Matt Walsh, that he's been incentivized to be as extreme and as heated in his rhetoric as possible in pursuit of an audience's attention? So I don't know. I think we're being incentivized in ways that actually make us way lesser beings.
First thing I guess I'll respond to is is your observation that my use of Instagram seems like schizo posting. And so I want to actually get into that, because I am a person who paints, I'm a person who writes, I'm a person who thinks, I'm a person who observes reality. What I am not is a brand, and what I am not is good at branding. And you think, when you look at me, you think it's schizophrenic, because what you're seeing is someone who's actually just an interested person who's interested in the world and picks out different things they're interested in at a particular time and has a really poor sense of graphic design. And also, I'm a male, so of course I don't care about presentation as much about that stuff. So your entire... See, you lay the trap by thinking of things that way. I'm actually just a person. I'm not a brand. And so you see that as schizo, but that's because I don't like coordinate the colors of my Instagram or whatever it is, or have logos or this or that.
You're right.
I think that's an issue. Now granted, my interests do range so broadly, and I do have a certain way of communicating and writing that I know can be opaque to a lot of people, and I accept that. Secondly, I think if you think that Matt Walsh is an extremist, you simply don't understand you don't understand much. I don't think that Matt Walsh is an extremist at all. So I heard about that, but I didn't watch any of it because it doesn't concern me, because it's gone tomorrow. And so that's my way of dealing with all this. I just don't think about the ephemeral. I don't spend a lot of time on it. That's how I deal with it.
I think that we're incentivized to pay attention to the ephemeral. And that's my criticism of Walsh. I actually don't care that much either. It's not really that important to me how other people choose to couch their message. Couch? Is that right?
Seems sure.
Cool. Okay. You know, if you want to be extreme, I'm saying in the rhetoric, not like he's an extremist. That's crazy. He's just conservative and intense. I guess intense is an equally appropriate word for what I'm trying to convey. Because he was like mean. This is the whole thing. It's like he's mean. And
that's not extremism. I'm sorry. That's just you've been so pulled over into this nanny state on social media that you think that anyone who implies maybe something that is a slur or something that was normal talk in the 1990s now suddenly appears mean. And to some degree it is, because the culture has successfully been shifted over into this kind of therapeutic society where now everything that is, you know, a little bit heated becomes a news story. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, what do you think Matt Walsh is? I mean, he's a talking head, which is what we are too, by the way. That's literally what we're doing. We're on a podcast. Our heads are about the only thing that's on the camera.
I don't want to be a talking head.
That's what you are. You made that decision. So we present ourselves, you know, a certain way for a certain audience. He knows what he's doing.
But it's fucking weird. I don't like the sense that I'm being incentivized to pursue attention. So like today, Jordan Peterson retweeted my tweet, and immediately I was like, how can I do more tweets like this? And I saw the thought process. Immediately was like, oh, I'm going to go in this direction because this is what got me traction. And it's not even that the tweet is per se that great. It might just be that it happened to be seen by Peterson at that time and happened to be retweeted. There could be another tweet right before that about something different that he could have equally liked and could have had that same traction, but just didn't because he didn't see it. It didn't get retweeted by another person that would have put it into his view or whatever. And that's that. And so this weird sense that what I give my attention to and what I pursue in life, what I entertain intellectually, could be decided by an algorithm, by what brings me attention online. That is so real. I'm conscious of that. So since I'm conscious of it, I catch it and it grosses me out and then I reject it. But there's a lot of people that are probably not catching it, probably not grossed out by it, and are probably having their lives, attention, their thought processes dictated by what's getting them traction online.
Well, respectfully, one of the reasons we're doing this podcast about this subject is because of that event, which you just said you're conscious of and you understand. So there is no escape. I mean...
No, you have to be discerning is what it is. I think that it's there's a middle ground, right? Where you notice. I notice what people resonate with. I notice what gets me traction and attention. But then I have to review and say, do I actually want to go further into this just because it's got me attention? Do I want this to be my brand? You're a free man because you're not a brand.
I think that we're so far, and I mean all of us, are so far deep into this new world that we can't even understand. And you know what I always try to do in my segments, such as Word of the Podcast, is I try to examine language and see what it says about where we're at. So in what you just said, you use the word brand, you use the word resonate, and you use the word traction. Now, those aren't words that people actually... real human beings use when they speak to each other like human beings. So what has happened is that the vocabulary of the social media sphere, and to a lesser extent, the kind of vocabulary of the
marketing
and corporate world has implanted itself in your mind, which goes to another thing which we're talking about, which is how we do this podcast. Because you said, and I think correctly, you know, we don't want to just do the podcast where we're ranting and shouting and all that kind of stuff. Now, we do that for fun a lot of times, and we have our episodes where we do that. They're more laid back or whatever. But there's something about that system of control that is over us, because we constantly have to think about what we're doing on this platform. I'll give you another example from what's happening right now. You just said you said earlier the word fuck. So you swore. In my mind, when I heard that, I immediately knew that the YouTube algorithm picks up on curse words within X amount of minutes of a podcast and then will demonetize the podcast. Now, we're not monetized anyway, so it doesn't matter. But do you see how deep everyone is into this system?
Fuck.
And so what I think that it requires, and sometimes where I've wanted to be more outrageous and ranting and using language that's really harsh, it's not so much, it can be a kind of antidote to this whole system of control that feels like it's built up around it. And yes, it can be, sometimes it's not useful.
Sometimes it goes to the other extreme too, right?
But I see the rage as a useful tool to kind of break out of that cage on occasion.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean completely. And I agree that you have to draw the line in the sand to a certain degree. I'm not going to stop fucking cursing. Period. That would be insane to me that my normal everyday speech has to be sanitized for a public YouTube video platform for adults.
But that's reality.
This is nerd shit.
And so you just said it's insane, but that is the reality, and the consequences are the consequences.
Yeah.
So we'll make the choices, right?
Yeah, but this is what I mean, is that I get that pushback of it. But then you risk going to the other extreme where you become controlled in the reverse, which is they move left, you move right. And so when you end up being so knee-jerk contrarian, where the attempts to control you actually push you to always do the opposite almost automatically, it's like you're just as controlled, but it's this indirect method of control. And to me, I don't like the feeling that anything is making me choose what I choose. I don't want to curse just because I know I'm not supposed to on YouTube. I curse because I enjoy cursing. This is how I speak. It's actually how I choose to speak. Now, of course, there's many influences beyond that. I can't get it to every single influence and reject everything that influences me in the world, but I sure as hell can try to reject such a perverse and vapid influence as YouTube, as an algorithm.
No, you can't, because we use it.
But we reject it nonetheless, and you can tell because our podcast is so unsuccessful.
And that may be true.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't like that. I think it also messes up your art, too. If you're... Oh, you know what I was thinking today? Naming articles, naming essays, naming everything. The way that we name things changed so much when we had to take into consideration how it would rank in the search results. That just sucked the artistry out of titles, because now instead of beautiful, poetic, eccentric titles, it's 10 ways you can use this to get your way, 5 ways to do this, the thing that you need to know today. It's all clickbaity titles, and it works, but it's so boring. I rebel against this. I rebel against it too. When I title my essays on my newsletter, I don't think of them in terms of how they'll rank online whatsoever. I do think in terms of, well, what would someone be somewhat intrigued by? But that is a little bit more of a traditional thing to consider as a creator, is like, what would the audience be interested in? It's that third influence of what's going to get this ranked in Google? What's going to get this ranked on YouTube? What is someone going to search and then find? Will they find this if I title it this way? Those things it adds more marketing than artistry to what you do. And yeah, if you're trying to write listicles, then great, this is your golden moment. But if you're trying to write, you know, beautiful, creative poems, you don't want to title them so that they rank in Google.
You use Substack, right?
Yeah.
So here's another example of how what you said makes sense, but there's another layer to this that just kind of makes it, well, put it in perspective. From my understanding, Google downranks Substack in their search results. So what you do doesn't matter, is what I'm trying to get. There's levels of control that have been put into place for various different reasons. We don't have the time to go into each of those reasons, and they vary. That makes what you do inconsequential. So Substack actually, because spoiler alert, I may be coming to Substack soon. They have a team now, I guess, recently they put into place to try to work on search engine optimization for authors and for their website. So, you know, also on the idea of 10 ways to make your home cozy this Thanksgiving season or whatever, it doesn't matter what the title of that is. The actual work and the context is worthless anyway. So it doesn't bother me. In fact, I actually prefer article titles like that because I know what to avoid. I believe we all have to learn to be much more, we need to learn survival skills for the internet superhighway. That's what I say. The internet superhighway is a dangerous place.
Cyber survival skills. Come on, how could you leave that on the table? Cyber survival skills.
Yeah. 10 cyber survival skills to get you through 2023.
Oh, well, that should be your first Substack essay.
I'm going to continue just doing what I do and being what I am. And that's it.
That's banned.
Then I'll go to a different platform. I mean, we're already on Rumble, just so everyone knows. Every video we put on YouTube, I put on Rumble. Maybe I'm going to start putting on Odyssey. I don't know. Odyssey is being like investigated by the SEC. So I'm not sure how that's working out. But I may do that too. And every episode is backed up on external hard drives in case we get deleted someday. I mean, you know, I think, well, this isn't a rant about YouTube. Maybe I'm off topic a little bit. I don't want to get off topic, and I want to make sure that I adhere. Another, let's a little behind the scenes, yeah, also, right? Look, sure, at how we control ourselves. When we decided to do this episode, you said, I'm going to set a timer in front of me so that we can like be more controlled, which is a reasonable thing to do. And I always like to give the people the behind the scenes, you know, of what's happening here. And you're like, we need to structure this better, which you're not wrong, because we interrupt each other a lot because we're on Zoom. But we need to time this and regiment this and all that kind of stuff. We live in a cage. We live in a cyber cage.
Oh, boy. It is true. I mean, there are certain limitations that are worth considering because they're for your creative benefit. You know, they're, even when you write, when you make art, you do work within certain limitations. It's just you have to think about what those limitations are and if they're for the betterment of the art or if they're just some tyrannical, terrible invention that someone else thinks is noble and they're enforcing on you that ultimately doesn't make what you're doing better, just makes someone else feel better about what they're doing. And censoring our podcast, controlling us with an algorithm, I reject it.
But whoever needs to hear that advice is already lost as an artist.
Well, yeah.
So if you need to hear the advice, don't worry about what other people think, then you should just write listicles. That's more up your alley. Once you've already mentally gone into that state, and I feel sorry for people that are younger than me like you, because you've actually gotten the brunt of this a lot more than I did. I still lived in the halcyon days of the 90s where this wasn't as much of an issue. And it really wasn't.
No, definitely.
But I understand. I understand people, why they do that, why they think that way. I'm not immune to it, but I am a lot more immune to it because I've also, you know, especially in writing, I've had the experience of writing short stories and having people write me back, editors, and say, I actually really like this story, but there's no way I can publish it.
Why?
I think maybe that's
best for another.
I've spent a lot of time writing horror stories and science fiction stories, and there was a particular story that I wrote that was extraordinarily, it was a dark story, and it fit well, but you know.
Oh.
But no. It never occurred to me, like there was no sense to me of being like, well, let me rewrite it to make it palatable or whatever.
No, that's whack. I mean, that has also always been a facet of creative work to a certain degree, you know, publishers, whatever, even before the internet existed. It's just, we're in a new era of that where, as opposed to once upon a time, perhaps in the most charitable description, a publisher's intention in sending back their feedback to you was that they thought it would make the piece better. Now, all the feedback we're getting in how you should be online, how you should speak, how you should write, is mostly to be inclusive or to be palatable to some other audience outside or to just not cause controversy. And these influences are not for the betterment of what you create. And, you know, to tie up here with the point on attention, I think also chasing attention online has the same effect where, yeah, there's a lot of things that you can make that will get you plenty of attention, but are they good? No, often not. I'm often really surprised at how things that are incredibly popular online are really bad. And that's not a new story that, oh, popular thing is actually bad. But I think more people are subjected to the very powerful influence of chasing attention now that so many more people are online. I mean, especially for younger people, these kids on TikTok, I can't imagine what it would have been like for me to grow up with such a powerful and personal influence to seek something that teenagers are already naturally obsessed with, which is acceptance and popularity. But now to seek it from faceless groups of infinite numbers online, and for the worst reasons, for things like getting really offended or being extremely cynical or doing like stupid pranks or whatever it is, or just having the most unhinged takes, having emotional breakdowns online, all of these things that are really undesirable in the real world and destructive for the individual are incentivized online. But it's this terrible parasitic relationship where, yeah, you're getting this short-term attention, but in the long term, it's actually not leading you anywhere better. And so reject the attention economy. Be free to do what you actually want to do, what is interesting to you. It takes longer and you might fail, but if and when you do gain attention for doing things that you actually care about and enjoy and believe in, that is so much more rewarding and constructive for both the individual and their society than anything else you could get attention for that you don't actually really believe in, nor is it good for you or your society. So I leave it there. You have any last words, Justin?
I have many last words and many things I could say about that, but in the interest of the prison of time that has been imposed upon me and the injunction to perhaps not be so extreme, I'll simply say goodbye.
Wonderful. And on that note,
perhaps actually one last thing. I will say, you know, if you sit down to create a piece of artwork and the first thing in your mind is, how am I helping society? I think that you're not a good artist.
So. No, it's not that either. But I think my point is that you exhaust me. No, and forget about it. All right. If you'd like to give your attention to us, please like, subscribe, leave us a comment with your thoughts on this attention economy and how social media is incentivizing us to seek attention in ways that are actually really bad for us and everyone else around us. And we will see you on the next episode.